Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Thursday, the 12th of August, recording at 9:45 p.m., and that's British Summer Time. Now, first, a quick look at the highlights here today. And in as far as stock markets are concerned, most of them weakened today. In Asia, there, in response to Wall Street's big sell-off yesterday. Now, in Asia, some of the stock markets recovered well from their earlier weakness, but were still down on the day overall. The European stock markets seesawed a little bit. It held up quite well, actually, but then did close with small losses for the most part. The exceptions that I see on the screen were the UK, which is up slightly, as was the Swiss market. In the Americas, Brazil was up slightly. Wall Street closed with gains, I beg your pardon, with declines in the order of just over 0.5%. For the main indices. So Wall Street spent most of the day in the minus column, particularly early on in the pre-market activity. Give you an example. The S&P futures contract, I think, got down to 1070 and change at one stage, or fairly early on in the day. It's 10 points above that right now at 1080. Elsewhere, long-dated government bond prices were a little bit mixed. Easier in the USA, slightly firmer in Europe. Gold was strong, and that's a little upward break from a small trading range, closing at, currently trading at 1215, and that's up nearly $17. So that was a good move. And the other precious metals steadied, although not quite by so much. In the industrial metals, and see, I hadn't seen them all. They were mostly firmer in here today. The one exception was nickel, which had a small decline. The grain and bean complex was strong. Gains were paired towards the close, but following the USDA report, prices had surged, led by wheat once again. Rough rice, also firm. Sugar had a good day in here today. And on the bearish tack, crude oil fell down to closed at 75.82, and it has been down as low as 75.52. Here today. Natural gas was a little easier as well. Gasoline was down, not surprisingly, in line with the crude sell-off. Okay, so what's going on here overall? Well, as far as stock markets are concerned, the majority of them are still range-bound. We did have some breakouts to the upside in the Asian markets, and some of those are still maintaining those upside breakouts. A few others, like Singapore, which just got up and touched a new high, have fallen back from the upper side of the range. Also in Europe, Germany, for instance, was the most important market to hit a new high for the year, that is, but has fallen back also. So we're still within these ranging patterns, which have contained most markets for a good many months. We go back into 2009, and sometimes into that sort of September, October 2009, for the beginning of that ranging phase overall. Now, that started as mean reversion after the explosive early gains that we'd seen in 2009. Then it became more than mean reversion towards the 200-day moving averages because investors expressed concern about all manner of things, as you will recall from audios a few months ago. I don't need to review them all, but the European Southern European debt crisis was one of the bigger factors. There was that meltdown on the 6th of May that unnerved investors. Lots of concern over the slowing of the U.S. economy and the disinflationary to deflationary pressures that exist in these OECD economies generally. So there's been a lot to unnerve investors. The flip side of all that is that valuations have certainly improved, and it includes earnings because of the greater efficiencies as companies have. That's a nice way of saying that they've laid off lots of people. But there are other efficiencies as well, although shedding labor costs was certainly the main one. Yields, there are now a decent number of shares around the globe offering really quite attractive yields, and I think that's an area where we want to be, or we certainly want to increase our exposure to some high-yielding shares. And I've been doing that a bit myself, as you might have noticed over the last couple of months. Fuller Money themes remain in generally good form here, but again, the predominant theme is that ranging activity overall. And we're not beyond that yet. What we have is, of course, an additional reaction in response to that short-term overbought condition. And the reaction has really started this week. And the key question in everybody's minds, I suspect, and certainly mine, is will the July lows come under pressure? And it's Wall Street that counts in this respect. Now, my own view on this is that I'm mainly in the camp of I hope that doesn't happen. I think it's probably not going to happen, but I can easily script, as can anyone else, why we might go down and challenge those July lows. But that's the big question here, and I actually prefer, in this environment where we've had a lot of volatility, where we've had an environment that few living people, if any, have experienced before in markets, that we really do need to take it, or I prefer to take it, you know, one day at a time here, and to try to call the swings in terms of the upward moves and the downward moves within these ranging patterns. I don't think that standing back and trying to give a 2-year, 5-year view, let alone even a 2-month view, is all that productive. Too much guesswork. I'd rather just follow the chart signals, and that's what I've been concentrating on. But the background overall is, I feel, reasonably favorable in terms of valuations. It's certainly favorable in terms of monetary policy. And it needs to be in terms of monetary policy, because a lot of capital has been destroyed by the disinflationary pressures. I do feel they're more disinflationary than deflationary. So in other words, house prices, everybody says, oh, deflation and house prices. Well, I see this as disinflationary. I don't want to sound like a pedant in saying this, but what we're seeing is house prices falling back from a very high level. And that's probably a very good thing overall. Another very good thing is the because bubbles eventually correct, and then it gets back to more sensible levels. in terms of both economic and social considerations. We are seeing consumers reduce their levels of debt. That's a very positive development for the long term, although it doesn't help the economies to gain traction here in the short term. And there is a degree of anxiety that's inevitably going to persist for a while. Has the Fed and other central banks, have they run out of ammunition? Well, I doubt it, but and hopefully won't here. One of the reasons why I'm more optimistic is because I think too much research, too much analysis is U.S. centric, and I think the bigger story is the rise of the new engines of global GDP growth, led by China and India. And there are a number of other big population economies out there participating in that as well, in Asia and also in South America. So overall, I think this is a reasonably promising environment for the medium term. We've still got this seasonal factor that I think will persist with us for the rest of this month now that this reaction is underway, and quite possibly a little longer. In other words, keeping us confined to these overall ranging patterns. But I think the downward moves, again, offer people opportunities to accumulate positions that they actually like. And as you know, I've been talking more about the high yielders recently, and I think any company that has an attractive dividend, that really has got to be of interest to investors, assuming that the dividend is covered. In other words, it can pay it. And companies that have those track records of increasing dividends to a reasonable percentage, 10, 15, 20% or more, over the last 5 years, that's a very good sign overall. And you know, the number of shares yielding 4%, 5%, 6%, even more, continues to increase. And that's got to be of interest to investors, I feel. Not least as long-dated government bond yields are so low. I maintain that government bond yields are an exceptionally risky trade overall. People are treating them as a safe haven because there's a momentum play that's been going on there, and they've been rationalizing it on the basis of the what they see as the deflationary pressures. The key factor, I think, fueling the momentum trade has been the quantitative easing. And it may go on supporting those markets, probably will go on supporting those markets for a while longer. But this so-called safe haven is coming at a very high risk. And in the what could go wrong department, there are too many people out there who are saying there's absolutely no inflation in the system. Well, if you live in the UK, you know the governor of the Bank of England is said recently, I'm paraphrasing him because I can't remember the exact quote, but that it looks like the rate of inflation is going to stay higher than we expected for, and higher than we would like for a while longer. Well, one very big reason for all that is, of course, they've debased the currencies, all the currency printing that's taken place. But also, the growth engines of the world are sufficiently strong enough so that they're putting upward pressure on commodity prices. And those commodities are also priced in dollars. The dollar has fallen back, although it's steadied in the last few days. It was due for a technical rebound. But you have this rising demand for a lot of commodities. And then quite recently, for most commodities, and then quite recently, we have had these crop problems, which have ignited a number of the agricultural commodity prices led by the grain and bean sector. And therefore, We definitely have a risk of commodity price inflation. Now, I did say yesterday in my commentary that that had been checked for a while, and looking at crude oil, and that's the big one. That's the one that really, really counts. Crude oil was touching $85, what, a week or two ago, and here we are today, down just below $76. So that has pulled back, has a high degree of correlation, has shown a high degree of correlation with stock markets, as have many other commodities. But overall, they remain quite firm. And so the chances of having either food price inflation or industrial commodity inflation, or both, are quite high. Remember, our view is very much that this is a secular bull market for commodities. I don't need to review all the reasons for that, but I think that they are, broadly speaking, supported by the technical action that we see in commodity markets overall. I think Owens pointed out today that crude oil, I beg your pardon, the natural gas, he pointed out that natural gas was the only commodity that is trading anywhere near the levels that we saw prior to that sort of 2001 period when and 2002 period when they all bottomed out and commenced upward trends. So the inflation is less in the form of wages, although you certainly see some sharp wage increases in China, although from very low levels. But in the West, the inflation is not in terms of wages, but it is in terms of foods. And if you pay those bills for foods, you will have experienced that. And I fear we're going to experience a good deal more of that as we go ahead. So that behooves us all to read these markets accurately and to make up the difference here in terms of some good opportunities, some high-yielding shares, fuller money themes, a little bit of judicious commodity trading. That's what I'm really most interested in this environment overall. And at some point, these treasury bonds are going to be a massive short. I'm a little premature in having moved into that area not too long ago. But my big message regarding bonds is that as havens go, people are paying a very high price for what I regard as dubious security. I would much, much rather have a high yielding share that's leveraged to the global economy and has the d dividend covered sufficiently. And because it's leveraged to the global economy, has the very real prospect of being able to increase those dividends. And on that note, all the best to all of you. Roll on Friday. I'm sure it'll be interesting as well.